You can be seated.
The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going, and that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw the large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countrysides and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000.
Thanks, Elaine. Well, I'd like to tell you a story about a meal, the most amazing meal that I've ever had. I am a Jew, and I live in a rural village outside of Jerusalem in Judea, which is under Roman rule, with my husband and my children. But before I can get to my story, I need to give you a bit of background about me. We live on a farm. I'd like to tell you that life is easy, but I can't do that. Life is hard. It's hard because I have lots of children to take care of, food to make and wool to spin, fabric to weave, a house to clean, and animals to feed. There's never a shortage of things to do around home. All this is a good kind of hard. But there's another kind of hard. Hard when the tax collectors ask for more than we can afford, and we have to sell one of our precious goats to pay the bill. Hard when the Roman soldiers beat up my sons and threaten my people, just because they can. We live in fear all the time. I think my greatest fear is fear of what's coming for my children. If we lose this farm like so many have, how will they live? How will they feed their children? We're all trying to do right by our Lord with our lives. So we work hard to obey the law, to be good and faithful worshipers of our God. One of the things that helps us bear the weight of life is the promise that one day a great deliverer will come. God is going to send a great man to save us. The scriptures talk about him a lot. He will make all wrongs right, and evil will be destroyed. The world will be turned upside down, and power will be in the hands of the good. One day, when that happens, there will always be enough food. We needed to hold on to God's promise for a better day. But when life's a struggle, it gets hard to hope. It's especially hard to hope for a future that we may never see in our lifetime, because many people have been waiting for a very long time. Proverbs 13:12 tells us, "Hope delayed makes a heart sick." And my life proves this is true. Waiting has worn all of us down. We were in great need of a sign of good things to come, in great, great need. And then Jesus. He was all people were talking about. Men who claimed to be the Messiah came and went, but he was different. He didn't claim to be the Messiah at all. Instead, he did all kinds of things that this Messiah is supposed to do. He healed the sick. He defended the poor. He spoke words of life. My husband and I, we decided we needed to see him for ourselves. So we packed up our family and made a trek north to Galilee. We tracked him down on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. We found a spot at the bottom of the hill. And then Jesus and his disciples walked right over to where we were sitting. We couldn't believe our luck. We could see and hear him clearly. There were thousands of people there that day. Thousands. But it was quiet, just like it is in here right now. Everyone was silent so we could hear him speak, and we hung on his every word. He went on for hours. I hope I can communicate to you what happened that day. Jesus explained the scriptures to us, but that wasn't the half of it. He went way back to the promises of God that God had made to Abraham and to Moses and to David and the prophets, and he told us that we would still fulfill them as the people of God. That day, we came to believe that there was still hope for our people, hope to work out the promises that we had been created for. God had forgiven us for the sins of our past. He was so inspiring, and we needed to be inspired. He gave us a sense of new purpose. Pain and shame just gave way to hope. And we felt God's love and forgiveness coming right through Jesus to us. I'd never been so grateful to be a Jew. Our hunger for meaning and purpose was satisfied that day. Yes, I felt satisfied. I'd never felt that before. The irony was that through all of this, I was really hungry. We all were. We'd planned on getting food at a local village that morning, but when we heard where Jesus was, we did what everyone did. We just ran. And that's how badly we wanted to be near him. So the sun was setting, but no one wanted this day to end. It's not like we weren't used to hunger anyway. We could manage. We just willed him to keep on going. And then Jesus' disciples approached him and said, "This is a remote place. It's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." Jesus took a moment and said to them, "You give them something to eat." Well, you should have seen their faces. "That would take more than a half year's wages," they said. "Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have? Go and see." So the disciples scattered, and a few minutes later they came back with a measly 5 loaves and 2 fish. Jesus had the disciples put everyone into groups on the grass, and then Jesus took that little bit of food in his hands, and he looked up to God, and he gave thanks for that food. And then he broke up the loaves and gave the fish and the loaves to his disciples to distribute to all of us. Jesus was very intent on not doing the feeding himself. He was making it possible for his disciples to feed us. Now, I'm a parent, so I understood what he was doing. He was teaching them what they were supposed to be doing. I watched as Jesus gave the bread and the fish to his disciples over and over and over again. I was right there. I saw it happen. but I have no idea how it happened. I knew that there would only be enough for one, but the fish and the bread, they just never stopped coming out of his hands, and we were all laughing in amazement. It was pure joy. At first, we were just too astonished to eat. But then our appetites, they got the best of us, and we ate like we were part of a great feast like it really was. So you have to understand, with things as they are, there isn't much food to go around. Most of the time, we don't have enough to be satisfied. My kids are bone thin, and it's an awful thing for a parent to have to live through. The only times we feel truly satisfied is at the festivals. But there's never been anything like this. We ate until we were completely stuffed, until we couldn't fit another bite in. It felt like heaven had begun. This was the age of the Messiah. We so hoped it was. Well, when all was said and done, there were 12 baskets brimming with leftovers, one for each of the disciples to carry. Leftovers, leftovers, imagine that. We were all completely satisfied. Everyone there that day had sought out Jesus for spiritual food, but that day we'd been fed spiritually and physically. So now, you people here aren't Jews, so you're likely focused on the miracle. That's understandable. Of course, we Jews, we were excited and impressed by the miracle, that's for sure. But what we couldn't stop talking about was what that miracle meant. Because we'd been taught that when the last days arrive, the age of the Messiah, the great miracles from our history will be repeated. One of the most important miracles in our history was the one that went on for 40 years. At the request of Moses, God provided manna and quail in the desert to keep us alive, bread and meat. And that day, Jesus gave us bread and fish meat. It was a connection that nobody there missed. There's also a story about the great prophet Elisha, who multiplied 20 loaves to feed 100. And that day, Jesus multiplied 5 loaves to feed 5,000. We'd been hearing talk about Jesus and the miracles that he'd been doing, and how they lined up with the kinds of things that the Messiah was meant to do. But this was, well, it was hard to not get our hopes up. Maybe after all these years, our God was going to come back to the temple, drive out the Romans, and make Jerusalem God's home. Maybe, finally, this city would radiate with God's glory as promised, and then we would never have to be hungry again. Remember that verse from Proverbs? Well, it has an ending. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. Feeding the 5,000 was a perfect sign that Jesus was the Messiah. Many people that day believed this miracle was Jesus declaring himself. The book of John tells us that Jesus had to sneak away after the miracle because the crowd was so convinced he was the Messiah that they intended to make him king by force. It was that obvious to the crowd what his miracle meant. When Jesus fed the 5,000, it connected him to two giants in Israel's past, Moses and Elisha, but it also pointed to the hope for the future. Here's one of the many passages that would have been going through their minds as they feasted that day. On this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines. Everyone having enough was always God's end game. Always. Everyone having enough to eat is crucially important to God. This miracle was meant to be a taste of what was coming. So one of the more important takeaways from this story is Jesus wants to meet people's needs through other people, through his disciples. Jesus wanted the disciples to do the feeding. And his miracle, it gave them the capacity to do it. The disciples became Jesus' hands and his feet in this story. And this story is the model that we are meant to follow. So today isn't about getting you to do more to feed the hungry people. We already do a lot of that around here. But of course, we won't stop you if you want to embrace this practice in a more intentional way. Of course not. But sometimes we need to make space to look at the good things that we have accomplished. We need to celebrate the good. And this will energize us so we can keep doing what we're already doing. We need to know that our sacrifices are making a difference in people's lives. If you're part of this church, then you are already feeding the poor. We donate to the Compass on your behalf. We also help people with food and basic needs through the Benevolence Fund at the church. And this is a fund that's designed to help people in crisis. And often that crisis manifests itself in not having enough food. The entire staff and representatives from the elders are involved in making sure the benevolence funds get to the people who need them. Anyone can donate to this fund at any time, but we do a specific offering for the benevolence fund right around Christmas. So to keep encouraging you in all that you do, I've invited three people to be here with us today. So I'd like to invite Tammy Pierce and Jim Carey and Trish Trapiani to be come up with us right now. Great. Yep. There's a mic down there. So Tammy here is in the middle, and she's our office administrator at the church, and Jim Carey is going to speak to the world perspective. I'll tell you a bit more in a second. And Trish is manager at the Compass, which is our local food bank. So let's start with Tammy. Tammy, what you may not know out there is that Tammy is on the front lines of benevolence giving. And so Tammy, tell us, what does the church do for those who are in need?
First, I just want to say that it's a blessing to be a part of this church, and we see many, many people walk through the doors of our church, especially just being here on Lakeshore. And the stories and the journeys that we go with people, it is a blessing to be a part of and that they invite us in. First example I'm just going to give you is a food example of a mom that came in and was saying that she didn't have lunch for the kids the next day and wasn't going to be able to bring them for school, because how can you send your kids to lunch without food? And so in practical ways, we were able to help her out. She did come back the next day and was thankful, and was mentioning how the bags of milk that she was able to buy, she actually shared with two other people, because there's three pouches in one of those bags. It's great. Mm-hmm. And so just even being those hands and feet loving, we pass it on to other people. But in also much bigger, broader ways, it just takes any one of us it can happen to. It just means someone getting ill and not being able to work. It means mm-hmm. someone losing a job and not being able to work. It's a crisis happening in your family and not being able to deal with it. And these are the hands and ways, feet that we can help. From the colder weather coming now, we hear stories with having to pay for heat and for having to get groceries for your kids, having to get coats and gloves and hats. These are all added expenses. And you take a car something happening to your car that you need to go day back and forth to work, and all of a sudden you've got this expense you didn't have in your budget. And how do you pay for that milk? Or how do you pay for that, you know, the food? How do you choose? And even for someone to have to make those kinds of choices in our everyday lives. So in many ways, even these little gas cards or food vouchers or bus tickets, getting them partnered up with the Compass. But as a church, we help many, many families, sometimes paying that heating bill once a month. But again, it's that hands and feet way of doing it. So, and that you are the hands and feet of Christ. So.
Thank you, Tammy. That's great. Jim, you spent your work career working with Christian Children's Fund and World Vision. You've traveled the world and seen communities change through crisis intervention. And you've seen the difference that feeding people makes. So can you tell us a little bit of what you've seen?
Yeah, it was my privilege over the years to visit many different communities and locations, whether it was in Ethiopia or northern Kenya or Sudan or Mozambique and a few other countries as well. I was never a frontline worker like Tambi and others. I was never there in the midst of the initial chaos, but I was there when I could see the effect that World Vision, Christian Children's Fund, Samaritan's Purse, and other organizations were making, along with the United Nations, World Food Program, and other organizations, to provide the essentials of life. It could be a mother who has been widowed and who has come to a refugee camp, emaciated and benefiting from therapeutic or supplementary feeding. It could have been a mom and dad, a multi-generational family who has fled from war or conflict, political decisions in their own context, who've come to a camp for relief, for hope, for restoration. So it was always my privilege in the midst of that to see Christians and others working very hard to bring the essentials of life, food, water, sanitary conditions, so that lives could be changed. And as part of the church community, we are an extension. We are part of that global response to hunger.
So when Tony Campolo was here, he said that the church is making a huge impact on the problem of world hunger right now. Have you seen this played out? Do you see our efforts changing the global picture?
Yeah, absolutely. The church has a long tradition. Karen has already spoken to that this morning. The earliest church actually provided a relief response to the church in Jerusalem. More recently, there was a Canadian church that was significant in influencing Canada's own relief and development policy in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. One of the most powerful influences in relief response in Ethiopia today is the Christian Relief and Development Association. The churches have come together to respond to the relief needs in that nation. So whether it's an individual who goes as a volunteer, whether it's a paid professional, whether it's other situations, the church is there, whether it's the local pastor and his congregation sharing those limited resources, or whether it's individual Christians, we have made a difference, a significant difference at this time. Karen, I'd also like to leave a bit of a challenge because there's been some recent research done out of Tufts University in the States, and this is what they have to say. In the 7 decades since World War II, the numbers of people who have died from famines has fallen spectacularly. The drumbeat of 10 million starving every decade has faded to a small fraction of that toll. And the near elimination of famine mortality is one of the great achievements of our time, and we, as part of the Christian Church, has been fundamentally part of that transformation, of that change that has occurred. So we need to keep on. The challenge, though, is that today, the global decline in famines and famine deaths has suddenly halted and is being reversed. The increase is not due to climate or natural disaster, but is driven by war, and this is significant, blockades, hostility to humanitarian principles, and a volatile global economy. So earlier this morning, we were remembering the challenge of war. The challenge of war today is causing even more deaths because of famine and lack of access to people who are struggling and suffering. So my challenge is for us to continue on to give and to be the church in all of these situations.
Thank you, Jim. So Trish, we're gonna talk a little bit about the compass and what happens in the compass. How much of the food and financial support at the compass comes from local churches and the community?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We're good?
Okay, so 50% of the food that we have and are able to distribute at the Compass comes from local donors, such as our churches, you guys for being one of them. And thank you so much for continuing to support what we do. the financial donations as well as food donations have a significant impact in how many families we're able to feed each month. Currently, we're feeding 430-plus families mm-hmm. every month. So your donations are quite a significantly impact that.
Can you tell a story or two of the impact that this is happening?
Absolutely. One of the most amazing things I think about being able to do what I do is being able to support the community that I live in. And there's not much that separates you and I from a client at the Compass. We're all really just a couple paychecks away from that. So being able to feed people is such a blessed job for me, anyways. We say at the Compass that we're help for today and hope for tomorrow. So what that means is that when somebody walks through our door for the very first time, it's taken them a long time to get there. They haven't just decided it's time to use the food bank. It's taken them weeks, months, maybe a year before they decide to walk through our doors. And when they get there, our main focus is to keep their dignity intact, to provide them help, and to provide them hope. And so we know the very first time they come, maybe they're just coming in because they're hungry, and that's okay. So they come in and they get what they need because of generous donors like yourselves. And then over time, we see the change in these people, in our clients. We see them, they're not as shy as they start coming in a little bit more often. They start accessing our other services that we offer, such as getting them connected to potential agencies and other resources that can help them get a leg up, if you will. Some people will serve forever, and we know that, but some people just need a hand. We talked about war today, we've talked about hope, and there's one particular family that's been with us for a while, and they fled Egypt several years ago when it was a mess. And they've been using our services. They also volunteer with us, which is great. She's a pediatrician, and he's a surgeon. And they use a food bank because their funds go towards wanting to be productive members of our society, wanting to use their degrees that they earned and they practiced for our Canadian families. And so that's one story. I'll think of another one in a second. Do you have another question?
Well, I got a tour of the Compass on Friday, and I came away so excited and so moved and full of compassion. I was so overwhelmed with the love that was there, the compassion in your stories and in your voice and in your commitment, and the quality of what is done and how it's done there with giving away food and the way balanced meals or balanced groceries are given to people and the opportunities. It was top-notch, just amazing. I was thrilled. Is there anything else you'd like to say as a last?
No, just thank you for your continued support. We're always there. If you ever want to drop by just to say hello, come in for a cup of coffee. We're the free coffee shop on the lakeshore, by the way. We always have coffee. We always have some snacks out. It's a great way to meet your community members. We have some people that literally just drop in for coffee. You know, maybe they're not clients. That's okay. And what's really important, I think, when talking about being part of something bigger, is that there's no us and them, it's a we. We're all working towards a common goal, and that's feeding either yourself or feeding a community, and we're all just there to do it together. So thank you.
Thank you all, this is amazing. Okay, so the last thing I wanted to do today is we have, I asked a few families who are from our church who have been cared for, to write a little response to you, to let you know what their experience has been like, and I'm going to get Tammy to read the first two.
Okay, so this is the first letter. I joined the church in 2015 when I was at my lowest. I joined a support group and met a lot of loving people. As time went on, and I started to feel better about myself, the church has helped me in many ways. There was always an open door to walk in. The staff made me feel welcome at each opportunity. In recent months, I hit a snag, and the church helped me out yet again. I'm extremely grateful for all the help and support. It's a great place to go and worship. And this is the second letter. As a single parent, I know firsthand how hard it is to go without basics and to feel hungry, lost, and hopeless. I also found firsthand how having experienced God's love through my church family in waves of practical help. Summer camp fees waived, gas cards, groceries, and overdue bills being paid are just a few. Most profoundly at Christmas time, when faced with having to choose between food or gifts, deliveries of the gifts for my young children to open accompany my grocery gift basket. This outpouring of God's love for my family is a true illustration of God's work and Christ's love in our community.
And here's the third letter. I and my family are blessed, and we are very thankful for Clarkson Community Church. The church has always been a great help for us, a smile when there's no reason to smile, a shelter when we have nowhere to go, a place to be fed and comforted in times of troubles. Your understanding, kindness, and patience are highly appreciated. We feel loved by the church. We pray that our Father in heaven will always take care, guide, and bless our church family. And this person ends with a prayer, which I think is a fitting way to close this part of the service. Let's pray together. God, may we love one another to the fullest as evidence of your ultimate love to advance the work of your kingdom. Amen.
Thank you.
To be the church is to meet people where they are. And we do that because of Jesus, who meets us where we are. Remember me, Jesus said. Remember that I came in order to meet people where they are. Remember that I came to enter into your hurt and to enter into your brokenness. Remember that I came to provide a way into the life that you were made for. Remember that I came to live and to die and to rise again so that you could have life everlasting. In 1 Corinthians 11, Paul writes, "For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you. The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, took bread. When he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me. For whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes.'" I invite you to take some time for silence while we set up for communion. Can I invite the service to come forward?